All right, I love a show that starts on time, so thank you all for being here. You could be anywhere, and it's the last day of the conference, so I really thank you for being here. It's a delight to deliver this presentation to you. My name is Laura Simpson. My mug is up there. I'm the CEO and co-founder of Sidedoor. We're a booking and ticketing platform based in Canada, but we do shows in DIY and alternative spaces all over North America, UK, Europe, mainly in Canada, but there's hosts of shows everywhere. And we are built for and by artists so that artists can take control of their live performance career. Before I get to the presentation, I want to acknowledge and support the artists and the panelists who have boycotted South By to call for a free Palestine ceasefire. It's absolutely horrific what's happening. Any way that you can use your platform to speak out about this, I think it's really important. I'm going to continue to speak out about it on socials and here on this platform today. We're being recorded. I'm happy to stand with peace and those who are fighting for peace. So with that said, I'm just going to get into it here. Can I get, before I start, any who's on the artist's side of the things in here? Okay, great. This is for you. Who's booking artists? Okay, great. Amazing. And who's just interested? Okay, cool. Thank you for all of you for being here again. All right, so I'm going to give you a little roadmap of what I'm going to do for the next hour so that you know where we're going. I'm going to present the data of the survey results, some of the takeaways that we had, some tactics that were recommended by the artists that I talked to. So it wasn't all just survey data, but I did interviews with dozens of artists as well as attended a ton of panels in the last 4 months about touring. And then a case study with Kaya Cater, which is on video in here. And then we have Bridget Fry from Housewife here, who's going to jump up on stage for the last little bit. And then we'll have time for Q&A. We're going to leave some time. Okay, so, but first, why? The touring advice that you get from anywhere pre-pandemic is probably not as applicable as the advice that you can get for those who are touring after the pandemic. Things have changed a lot. So we wanted to gather evidence and set expectations for what touring is like for an indie artist right now. We're going to learn from those experiences and make sure that your goals are set and you understand what's ahead of you. And we really want to be focusing on well-being on the road. We know that there's a ton of people who are burning out, who are canceling shows, who are, you know, just not able to tour because of burnout. So we really want to take care of each other. And finally, I really care. I've been doing this for 25 years. I feel like a therapist sometimes talking to artists. You guys do so much on the road, and as much information as you can get into you to prepare yourself is really what we're doing here. So last year was a huge year of touring for some people. Taylor Swift's Eras Tour grossed more than $1 billion. But the average indie artist is grossing about 20,000. This graph isn't even like that should be like a minuscule. This is not to scale. So in terms of the survey, the written results that we got, this is a very, I don't want to stand up here and be like, this is everybody. This is a very light smattering of across genres and across different kinds of bands, solo artists and band artists, different countries. And people who had maybe a band but toured solo. So we were trying to get a good cross-section of how people are touring and from different diverse backgrounds. So most of the time people are touring bars and clubs. That's still pretty salient despite the fact that we had a lot of clubs shut down during the pandemic. Then it's community spaces, restaurants, breweries, and wineries. A ton of private residences, which, I mean, I still host at my own house. It's a thing that I think is the highest ROI for artists in a lot of cases. Then theaters, soft theaters like PACs, and then other commercial spaces like galleries and that sort of thing. So in terms of where people are touring, most people are staying within their own countries these days, and they're touring within multiple regions of their country. So they're, you know, touring around their own region, and then they're going out to the Midwest or, you know, choosing regions and doing pockets. A lot shorter tours, by the way, too. 53% went outside of the country, and only a third went to multiple different countries. I found this interesting because I'm always looking at the booking cycles. Everybody kind of stays home around the holidays, which makes a lot of sense. Just in terms of thinking about when you're booking, also the most popular months are August, October, and June. So that's when you're competing with everybody else out on the road. So the why is a really important question. Why are you touring? The top reason that people gave was growing their fan base. So playing to new people, trying to find new people. Number two was earning revenue. It's still a large slice of the pie for people's revenue. And they really go out to try to make sure that they're pulling something in, especially when streaming isn't making a difference for them. Playing for their own fans is the third reason. So a lot of people didn't get out on tour until last year, and they want to connect with their fans directly. And the last two is just simply having fun and getting more experience playing live, especially for those who have never toured before, who started during the pandemic. In terms of ticket sales, I really want to point out that this panel and the work that I do is about emerging artists. A lot of the information you get at this conference is not for emerging artists. And so we show up here every year trying to give information back because this is about shows that are small. Tickets are selling about 100 or less to these shows, okay? It's okay. You're still connecting with fans. That's great. Keep doing it. And so the average ticket price is also something to note here, $21. I would say pre-pandemic, it was closer to $15. So people are able to charge more, and they're getting it. So don't be afraid to charge at least $20 at the door. Or pay what you want, which is also doing very well. People are definitely, if you say it's $20, they're throwing in a few extra bucks at the door or in a tip jar when you're there. So don't be afraid to ask for more. In terms of merch, it's still a thing. I had a musician say, I'm just a singing, traveling t-shirt salesman. But it is almost as much as you get per attendee for the ticket price. So $15 in terms of like what you want to bring out there. I was talking to the Merch Cat founder here. Vanessa did a workshop this week. I don't know if anybody was there, but talking about what you should bring on tour with you, how to manage it, what's going to sell well, how to, you know, make the most of it is really important. So it's a consideration for sure. And again, the fans are at the point of highest intent when they're at a live show. So how do you capitalize on that? How do you say, like, I have audience members all the time saying, I love this artist. How do I actually give them more money? I understand that streaming doesn't pay. Give them a reason to pay. And it doesn't have to be a big or expensive thing. It can be a sticker. It can be a pin. It can be, you know, some kind of interaction that you do virtually with them afterwards as a VIP thing. It doesn't have to be a physical object, especially if you're concerned about environmental things that are impacting with making new things and putting it out into the world. In terms of support, the people that we talk to are only half the time working with a promoter or an agent. So again, these are self-booked mostly, and this is not all the time. So this might be for some of their tours or some of their shows. And that, again, is okay. Don't worry about it. You can do it. It's hard, but don't give over this power until you actually have enough revenue coming in to split that pie. I think that's really important. In terms of expenses, gas was number one. People spent more on gas than anything else. And just on the environmental side of things here, I'm part of Music Declares Emergency, and one of the things that they always talk about is how audiences coming to your show often burn more gas than you going to them. So think about that in terms of having a hub where you might tour around to different suburbs or tertiary markets, you're actually burning less gas than all those audience members having to come to you in one place or flying to you. So it's expensive, but it's also maybe a little easier in the environment if you can go to your fans. Then it comes accommodations, flights, band member fees. All of these things are rated in terms of what the survey respondents said were their highest expenses. So this is for you when you're making your budget. And again, the percentages are down low because a lot of people didn't have that as part of their team. Okay, and so in terms of expenses, so the average spend for a year of touring, this is all of 2023, and this is, ratioed per shows they're doing, so about 25,000 here, but the median was 10,000. So some people are spending a lot, but the median was 10. So again, in terms of budgeting, this is around what you're thinking about for what you might spend. And the actual cost per show was in around $630. So that's accommodations, gas, all the things that go into making that tour happen. So now you know what to ask for, right? $630 per show is what it costs on average with these kinds of artists. How did you pay for it? How many people use their credit card to tour? Yep. 20% on that, that goes into your budget. Because you're not going to pay that off while you're touring. It's definitely going to be more than a month before you can pay that off. Credit card is definitely used a lot. Public funding, we're based in Canada, there is public funding. It's 50 cents on the dollar that they pay. But a lot of it is after you come back from a tour when you submit a massive final report. So again, you're carrying interest. So while that's good, it's maybe still interest accumulation there. Private loan, that's friends and family just helping you out. Crowdsource funding is still a thing. Use it if you can. Bank loans, I don't know a lot of artists who can get them, but that was listed as an option. And then some other additional sources here, including a band fund, which I think is always an important thing to have. So the net results. 57% reported actually profitable, which is great. Really great, especially considering that last year there was still a ton of people concerned about COVID, getting sick from COVID, not coming out because they were concerned, shows getting canceled, bandmates getting sick, all of those things. So that's a really good number for last year. And I can say already in the first 3 months of this year, I've seen it just skyrocket in terms of bookings and ticket sales. So it feels a lot better this year. The average net revenue earned was about $3,800. So when you're thinking about it as a revenue thing, it's not a lot of revenue. It's more of an investment still. That's not to say that you can't capitalize. This is tour expenses. This is not including the merch revenue. So that can tip the scales in a lot of ways for how big of a margin that you can take home in terms of money. 83%, yes, it was worth it. It is definitely something that everybody should go and do at some point, even if you're not super comfortable doing it. But it's a way to connect directly with your fans, and we know that that's the best way to grow your fan base. So just some numbers from the side door part of things. So we did 319 shows last year. The average total revenue was $842 per show. Again, these are DIY alternative spaces, so in a lot of cases, the artist is taking most of the gate, and they're also controlling all the ticketing information and managing the ticket price and seeing all the results, collecting all the data from the fans. So average ticket price was comparable to what the average was overall, $20. And again, these are tiny shows, so it's okay. This is growing, but just so you know, when you're playing to 28 people, it's important to really play for those 28 people. Play for the people who show up. So let's get into the key takeaways. Okay. So in terms of money, these are just pull quotes from people who responded to the surveys, just to give you some sentiment of what people are feeling out there. We earn more money than we have in any other year, played to tens of thousands of people. Yes, there are growing expenses, but there are many ways to make it work. So this optimism was pretty pervasive, as you can see from the 83% who said it was worth touring despite the expenses. Some felt it was exceedingly difficult. And this is something I wanted to bring up. People who you would consider more visible, more successful, are taking deeper debt to go on tour because they have more expenses. Tour buses are like triple the price they're flying instead of driving, also more expensive. More hotel rooms. Somebody gets sick, everybody needs a hotel room now. You're not sharing. So all of those things meant that all the mid-range artists that are out there touring are mostly taking a loss. This is what I've heard from tons of managers and labels out there. They're looking at it as an investment. Accommodations was number two in the expense list here. So people staying with the host of a show or a venue, including a discount on a hotel, was really important to folks. Accommodations as part of the deal is something to look for always when you're booking. I basically only make money these days on shows in my home region. Don't discard your hometown fans. And I would also say, think about not just playing in your hometown, but where can you go in the suburbs around? Where's the 3-hour radius that you can play to new audiences? The media who already loves you, how do they support you in covering you to go into more rural spaces? Take advantage of that. Let's get into some challenges now. So, in terms of folks, we're talking about audience here. Seems to be more simultaneously hungry for live music and not ready to go out and spend money. Anybody else feeling that? The audience is kind of like, burgers are $17 and so are ticket prices, and I had to save up for my Beyoncé ticket, and sorry, I can't come to your show. It's brutal. Brutal, right? I used to be able to bring plus ones with me all the shows. I'm going to solo all the time these days. It's harder to get people to come out to the venues. Pandemic, I think, really made people who want to stay home be like, yeah, that is the choice I'm going to make. I'm going to stay home forever now, right? We got to draw them back out, guys. We got to make sure that they're getting back out. They're missing a lot. So attendance is still lower. On the Canadian Live Music Association calls, as well as the NEVA calls that I've been on, independent venues across the board are talking about 50% attendance. So this is true for the mid-range artists as well. It's a lot harder than it was 10 years ago. This is why I'm saying, I think there's an advice from kids of the 90s in another room. Great. Also, maybe take some advice from people who just toured. So think about what it's like to tour as an independent artist right now. And yes, you get to hustle out there, but lean on each other for advice with people who have already toured in the last 12 to 18 months. So for some people, it's yet to be financially lucrative, and sometimes it sucks. But I'll keep doing it for that one person who comes to see someone they've never heard of and leaves feeling like they've just experienced something magical that can't be replicated. That happened to me yesterday. I walked by a show and I saw something that was absolutely magical. Now I'm following her on all socials, and I'm streaming, and I'm buying merch. You never know when it's going to happen. People put a lot of time and energy in tour booking and execution to only have last-minute venue cancellations and promoters who drop the ball. Anybody experience this? And do you feel like it's your fault sometimes? Right? But everybody's part of that deal, right? Like everybody's made an agreement here, and people are like, I'm busy, I didn't do whatever. You show up the way that you need to show up, and you should expect people to do the same for you. So I've got Hafitz here, who's gonna give a little commentary. American European-based artist.
I think you really have to do more vetting. It's easy to just be like, oh my God, I got a show. Great. Someone said yes. And then you just go and you just want to like mark a line in your spreadsheet to be green and add something to your tour poster, but you don't really think about like, what if that doesn't actually work out?
Let's get into the emotional toll. The emotional inspirational gains can be huge, but on the flip side, if touring conditions are hard, low attendance, bad sound, unwelcoming venues, it can take a toll on the mental health. We know this. We know this. This is the risk opportunity equation that we do. It's hard to feel like touring is still worth it when you look at the financials, but the connection with humans sustains me. So, I think this is pretty true for any artist, is like the direct connection that you're making with fans is really what makes it worth going out. In terms of tactics, I put that at the top because I had so many people say, don't go to New York City, that I was like, well, I've got to put it in there. Oops, sorry. Back. Here we go. It's just so saturated. There's so much going on, and there's a lot of pay-to-play places. So if there's too much going on and you have to pay to play, what are you paying for? Think about that before you book New York City. Go to the burbs around. There's tons of great places in New York State. Attend conferences, ones like these that are a little more, I would say, geared towards mid-level artists. I think South by is about meeting artist friends. And sometimes you get to network if you have a team, but it's hard as an independent artist to be in South by, I'll just say that. Folk Alliance is a great conference. Devin and I have been to Folk Alliance many times. Some of the smaller soft cedar ones, if you're like more into folk and soft cedar, that sort of thing, like NERFA and those conferences are great. Book them into your touring. So go do it as a showcase, do some networking, book your next year's set of tours while you're actually on tour. Seek live shows reviews. So not just from media, but from your audience members. At Sidedoor, we actually collect audience reviews after the show, so you can use those as pull quotes to show to venues, promoters, agents. Play locally, obviously. Some people use an alias when they're, I don't endorse this, but they're like, I'm Joe Blow from whatever, and this is my booking email address. But just know when you engage like this with a venue or promoter, you may hear some things that you don't want to hear. So, but it is used by a lot of people. Well, just like, you know, what they actually think about you and your music. Yeah, you got to be prepared to like really hear some frank opinions, I think. That's the only thing. Allocate 25% of the budget for unforeseen expenses. That seems like a lot, but it actually isn't. When you face like getting sick or delays or your car breaks down, it's important to figure out how to pay for that. This was a good tip. Use an Airbnb as a tour hub. So somebody was like, I just book in this one place. Everybody in my band has their own room to go back to. We leave all of our shit there. And then we just tour 3 hour radius around there. We just come home to that place every single night. Feels like home. Americans, you only need a passport to tour in Canada, so come see us. And ship your merch, don't travel with it. It's really hairy at the border. It's better to just deal with the COD or whatever you have to do, taxes, before that. Begin with your anchor dates, that seems obvious, but festival dates, anything that's going to give you a guarantee, and then build around that. Know what else is happening, like if there's an NHL playoff game the same night as your show. Could cut into you, it depends on your audience, right? Build with themes. This was a really good piece of advice from an artist who was touring, and they were mostly rockabilly acts, and so they themed it as a rockabilly show night. And so, because assuming when you're going to new markets, they're not going to know your name, but they're going to know the vibe. Is it seated or standing? Is it dancing? Is it loud? Is it, what are you doing? So give the audience an idea of what it's going to feel like. Build in days for off for mental health. This is really hard because it's expensive. But if you have a day to lay in bed when you're burnt out on tour, it can just make the rest of your tour go better. Collect and use reward points. So this is folks saying, like, I use the same airline, I use the same hotel chain. Not only do I get to collect those points and use them to save money, but I'm also know what to expect when I go into that hotel. It's the same experience every single time. So that helps with the just the mental load of organizing. Co-tours with other artists seems counterintuitive sometimes because you're splitting the revenue, but you have typically, if you can, doubling the audience or at least getting an audience in a market where you may not have. A few more here. Leave the band at home and go solo if you need to. This is a hard conversation to have. Really hard. But it's something that people have to think about in terms of 4Xing their expenses. Find a support slot. They don't often pay well, but playing to new audiences can be really good depending on your why of going on tour. That can be a good opportunity. Revenue streams, lean into merch sales, tips and donations. So again, highest intent is when they're at the show. before, as they're buying the ticket, they're at the show, post show, how are you communicating with them? How are you giving them opportunities to give you more, to participate more, to engage more? And do that before you leave home, because while you're on tour, like, you're just trying to play a show. A lot of people are taking side jobs, honestly. People working in construction, people teaching lessons, people composing film. It's not terrible. You're not selling out. You're not giving up on your dreams. You're just taking care of yourself. So when you're off cycle, it's totally cool to do this. There's no shame. People are still streaming online. I know folks who are doing weekly streams still and still getting tips every single week. Maybe it's only 10 people, but they're connecting with those fans, and those fans are like their super street team when they go to those markets. And do host shows in other alternative spaces. Again, I still am convinced that it's the highest ROI for artists. Pack those in when you can. So here's Ben Kaplan. He's a Canadian folk musician from Halifax, Nova Scotia. He's currently touring in Europe. He's doing a show in Poland, I think, today.
Playing a great show, like not letting yourself write off any show. Like I think that every show is the most important show I've ever played. Whether, let's say four people show up tonight, that is my one opportunity in this town where I can apparently only sell four tickets to get four converts who will go and like preach. Like I can't believe the show that I saw. What a pity there were only four people there. It was world class.
He really brings it, and he's not lying. He's playing to those four people like it's 4,000. Okay, Kaya Cater. Anybody know Kaya Cater? Awesome. Yes, from Canada. Been working and touring in the U.S. for a long time. She actually just was part of a film premiere here at South by because she composed the score for the film. Again, side gig. Paid off dividends. She also just was on stage with Taj Mahal and then released a single with him. So doing okay. So I had a long t chat with Kaya, and here's some of her tips that she was giving and just her experiences. She was definitely planning smaller tours, so 6 to 10 dates at a time, not 30 to 40 dates. Emphasize staying close to home, just so that she can zip back home if she's sick. And she did have to cancel 6 dates, actually, because she got bronchitis. And the hardest thing on that was her bandmates, who also lost funds, who had taken time off. But she did notice that venues were more understanding. They're not, don't push through if you can't do it. She did expand into film scoring and teaching music lessons during the pandemic. And so she actually, went and did classwork to upgrade her skills to do this. So it was really important. She's taking on more co-writes. The venues, in the case where she had to cancel her tour, they didn't want to go ahead with the other co-billed artists because they didn't think they could get the audience. So that's something as a risk if you're going to do that with another artist. Sometimes you can't actually just let those shows go ahead for the other artist if you have to pull out, because the venue has booked you for both of you because they don't think they can pull enough. The necessity to balance the number of bandmates on tour again, this she was talking about how hard these conversations were, but she had to do it. She also worked with session players in Kansas City. When she was there, she brought on a flautist who killed it on stage with her, but she had met her like 24 hours before, and it was still an amazing successful but cheaper option for her. Yeah, she's new market, still accepting door deals, doing smaller venues, just the normal build there. Like this is how you grow your market. And again, the additional roles of composing for film. So I asked her definition of success. She's like, I just want to pay rent and have a bit of savings. That's the kind of success we're talking about at an independent artist level. And really, we want to have a living wage for artists as much as possible. So that's why I really advocate to ask for what you need. She's now 30. She's been doing this for about 8 years. She's like, I've been through a lot of therapy. My touring skills are better. And she really wants the goal of having the choice of when to tour. I think that's a really good goal to get to.
Keep your tour as lean as possible. I know that it's really fun to play with other people, but it can be a stressor to have to pay someone else on top of yourself. And it's, touring solo is hard. If it's too caustic to your mental health to tour solo, I recommend touring with another artist and doing like a co-bill. Go easy on yourself. This is a really difficult climate to start touring in. But also, you can do it if you can stay organized and, be real with the numbers, then you can make it work. Get approached by a record label, get a lawyer, retain as many of your rights as possible. Don't turn your nose up at mailbox money. If you're a good songwriter, leverage that. Do as much co-writing as you can. Publishing money is really helpful, especially in the lean times. And try to have a long view of it. And when you need to cry, cry. And when you get to actually do the music and get outside of all the planning, just try to be in the moment and enjoy that. And like, you can do it. Like, it's hard, but it's not impossible. And you can make it work. Like, we're all hustlers.
Lawyer is an important part, yeah. Don't sign any contracts without a lawyer to review. Even a friend who's a lawyer is helpful. All right. I know it's getting long in the day already, and I'm going to invite Bridget on stage to add another voice to this conversation.
Hello. I'm Bridget, and/or housewife.
So yeah, I just want to get into some Q&A here with Bridget on her reflections, and then I wanted to open up to the rest of you so we can talk about this together. So what are your immediate responses from all that?
Oh, well, there was so much where I was just like, yep, there's a lot in there that feels very reflective. I mean, everything Kaya said was just very accurate and great advice. Yeah, I mean, I've been touring, I guess, in the grand scheme of things, not a long time, about 6 years. But for me, that's, since I was like 15. So it's like a quarter of my life or more. I don't know. I'm bad at math. And it's definitely, yeah, it's tough. I'm an independent artist now, but I signed to a major record label right out of high school. And so I've kind of had all the mid-level and small experiences. And there's, yeah, a lot of really good advice in there. I think what Kai was saying about keeping your tour small was something that really hit for me. I just did a solo tour in November, and that was a really hard decision to make, but ended up basically making the difference between taking a loss and breaking even. And so, yeah, I don't know. I'm like having trouble pinpointing so much because there's just so much good stuff in that presentation.
Drinking from a fire hose. It'll be online, don't worry. Tell me about the load that you have in terms of non-playing duties when you're independent versus on a label.
I mean, honestly, like, I think we're kind of in a place in the music industry where even if you're on a label, you're still doing so much yourself. Like, I was signed to a major label, but I went on a tour last spring, about a year ago, with Paolo Nutini. So big tour, selling out like 1,000+ venues, sold out. It was still really hard financially, and to make it work, because I wanted to bring a full band on the road with me, and to make it work, I had to be the tour manager and the merch seller and the artist and the band leader and do all of that. And that was still while signed to a label. So you really do have to do a lot more than just playing. And it's just about finding smart ways to do it and being adaptable. I did a tour in November where we made the decision for me to go solo with tracks, which is, I think, a whole debate a lot of people are having these days about whether or not to play with tracks. And it can kind of feel soulless sometimes, I think, but also can be really helpful. But yeah, I made the decision to go solo, and We were really smart about the way we did the tour. I was the first of three, and it was three solo artists. We all had tracks. We all toured together, shared the same van, shared the same hotel rooms, shared the same tour manager, who was also, the merch person. And that ended up being a really amazing tour. I was able to break even, which is I'm still part of that. I think 40% that is not profitable on tours usually. And yeah, making that decision of just all kind of working together and sharing the same resources ended up being the reason I didn't take a loss, but also ended up being a really great way to build community. I mean, you're talking about, like, in this kind of conference, if you're a new artist, how it's not necessarily about networking, but just about meeting other artists. And that was a really great way to do that. And I think kind of engaged the fans more too, because I could see these artists all hanging out together. But yeah, it's hard. And I think for that, I had to make the decision to go solo. But that meant I was able to afford to be, having a tour manager, which is, I think, if you can afford that expense, having a tour manager is amazing. especially for me, like just being able to, not having to worry about checking into the hotel and just showing up and staying there, and then being able to play the show. So that's, yeah, it's just all about like what things do you want to sacrifice and what things are important to you and kind of finding the like creative ways to get around that.
Maybe I can dig into that a little bit more. What did you have to let go of to make your tours successful?
I mean, it depends on the tour, but when we were touring with Paolo Nutini, we were crashing at a lot of people's places, which kind of, felt intense. We didn't take a Sprinter van. We were driving around in a minivan and crashing in people's places, but it meant that I got to have, three backing members with me, which when you're playing to, like thousands of people, that's a really important thing. So that was like, the thing I gave up in that tour was staying in a hotel and or like staying in nice hotels or staying close to the city. Like we would drive 3, 4 hours out of wherever we were to save money. Because I mean, just the advice of don't stay in New York. I mean, the hotels there are insane. I was just there for a conference. So yeah, that's what I gave up for that tour. And then my most recent tour I did, I gave up a backing band. I was just me and tracks, which was kind of a bummer, but it meant I was able to afford it. So yeah, it just really depends on like what is something you're willing to give up, and you kind of have to think about that.
And can I ask, because I know you and I know artists generally, the whole, business brain and organizational brain versus artist brain is not always evenly balanced in everyone's head. And, rightly so, you can't be necessarily an amazing artist and also have every single other piece of the puzzle together. So, can you tell me about how you overcome some of those challenges of having to do things that you're either like you don't feel like you want to do or that you don't feel like you have the skills to do, or how did you sort of build that muscle in order to cope?
That's a hard question. I mean, I'm lucky I have a really great manager, and I started as a teenager and I had my mom help me. I still know tons of artists who like work with family. I mean, I think even Kaya Cater, like she's an amazing professional musician. She still works with her mom, which is really actually really awesome to see. But yeah, I think it's just, you got to do what you gotta do, and I do not have a business brain. And so I work with a booking agent and a manager, which, if artists are able to not do that to save the money, that's great. I personally just don't have the organizational skills to do that. But yeah, just like for going on a tour and like tour managing, I just kind of had to buckle down and say, all right, this is what's happening, and I'm gonna do it. I don't really know like how necessarily. It was just kind of like, when something needs to be done, you roll your sleeves up and you do it. Which is like maybe not the most helpful advice, but
Just got to show up sometimes.
yeah.
So just one more question, then I'd love to open it up to discuss things with you. There's a microphone here if you want to get on mic and ask a question or even just share your experiences or advice. I'd love to hear that. The title of our panel here is, what are artists taking home? How do you feel lately about how artists are discussing that amongst themselves and really start, I mean, I think all the time about how salaries being published as part of the job offer or the job opening has become, sort of standard practice as it should be, as well as just posting, just like people knowing how much each other get paid. It used to be so f such a faux pas not to say, how much you're getting making. How important is that as part of the conversation in order to get what you need? And is it happening? Is that conversation happening?
I've definitely seen an increase in transparency in that. I've definitely seen artists talking about it a lot more, which I think is so important. Because I mean, even in this, you were saying like how these mid-size artists are, sometimes going into more debt, and I think that's totally true, and it's important to kind of see that. I mean, I have so many people who see, I mean, I'm not even that big of an artist. I'm like, I would consider myself to be still completely emerging and quite small, but I have a lot of people being like, oh, you're doing great for yourself. And it's like, well, no, I'm going into debt for a lot of shows. And I think it's important for everyone to be talking about that. And it's great to see, because then I think, once you kind of all have that understanding, you can then start talking about strategies and methods in a more kind of honest, transparent way. So I'm always glad to see. I mean, I think not even just in music, I think just generally there's an increase in the acceptance that we have to be transparent about our financial realities because inflation's crazy and the cost of living crisis is crazy right now. So I think it's important and it's definitely happening and should keep happening even more.
All right, let's turn to you guys. Who has something to say? Go for it.
Hi, great panel so far. Thank you both for your insights. So you talked a little bit about the shows at people's houses, which, in your local market, that's pretty easy to find, right? Just you have fans, people that support you. If you're planning out a tour to places, where you don't know people and you're trying to get those new fans, do you guys have resources you can recommend for booking house shows with, so that you can travel to a new city and play there instead of a venue?
I mean, yeah, social media and Sidedoor are great things for that. Like just reaching out and posting stuff on your story or, yeah, trying to, find stuff like Sidedoor, that there's programs for that. I don't do as many house shows. I have done them in the past. I don't do tons just because for me as a neurodivergent person, I'm like, I need to be in a hotel room sometimes and just have it be like a quiet, empty space. But I do think it's an awesome thing, and I've, been really enjoying seeing what Sidedoor is doing. But I don't have as much experience in that. It's probably a better question for you.
Just so you know how it works, on Sidedoor, it's the connection part is totally free, so you can post where you want to tour and when, and then do a radius of the area or like a specific place, and then like a date range or a specific date, and then you can just list exactly what you need. Like if you want a guarantee or if you need it, you can filter by PA and stuff like that. But you basically ask for what you need, and that gets blasted out to all the available hosts in the area, who mostly, honestly, some of them put up show calls and say what they want, but most of them just sit back and wait to see what comes in. So first of all, you're getting discovery by music aficionados who are always, opening those things up and checking you out and watching your live performance videos, whatever you have in your profile. But also it's an opportunity to connect with new people who sometimes can't book you but can recommend somebody else. So it's just connection tools. So you can just message back and forth with people. But I would always encourage to ask for exactly what you need and what you expect so you can set the tone of that conversation up front.
Awesome. Sidedoor sounds like a great resource. I'm glad to find out about it. Thank you,
I'm just
guys.
shamelessly plugging here.
Well, you're solving problems that we're having in real time, so thank you.
Thank you.
To your point, don't go to social media and get your fans to really like your music.
For sure.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's we use the same thing. We basically say post that link to your fans, and then people can sign up and book the show, and then we support the fan in order to, you know, give them the chops to do the show. Go ahead.
So, hi, I'm Emma. I'm a music industry student who's interested in working in touring and live music, and I was wondering for smaller artists, like, what are some tips for filling up larger venues?
Oh, boy. I mean, I hate to be like social media again, but I mean, there is a lot of really, you know, creative stuff you can do there. I've seen a lot of people like try to build a presence in the city before they're actually there. There's a lot of really creative things to do there. Yes, that's one.
Okay.
Yeah, don't be afraid to bother and pester your friends.
Bother
sure.
them.
Okay.
Yes, that's a good one. But yeah, like finding creative ways to do social media. I've seen like people will like go into the city and like you know make videos of them like performing throughout the city a day or a couple days before the show. Like there's always you know just kind of like creative stuff. You know, like just shameless self promo is just the way to do it sometimes. I'm really bad at it, to be honest, but I see it working really well for other artists who are willing to kind of just go out and maybe put them themselves in like a kind of awkward or uncomfortable position of just like playing around a city. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's tons of creative ways. I've seen people do not treasure hunts. What do you call them?
Oh yeah, for the tickets.
Yeah, like scavenger hunts for like free tickets. Like there's just. I think the trick to getting people out to show is not just making a show, but making it like an experience that goes like kind of beyond that, I think is a really good way.
Also lean on your fellow artist buds in that region to elevate you. They may not know you, but they may know these other local artists, and their trust in those local artists will go a long way to supporting you.
All right, cool. Thank you so much.
Hello. I manage a indie pop funk band called Tallulah. We just started touring about 6 months ago, some small cap headline, but mostly support type stuff. It became immediately clear to us we were not going to be able to do more than day trips unless we started doing some kind of arrangement like you're talking about, backing tracks, like something to get the cost down to go outside of our area. As an artist, I'm sure you struggle with that decision because in my discussions with the band, they're struggling with that. How did you get through that? And then also, how do you feel like your audience reacted? Were they accepting or did you feel like there was a drop in the, you know, the vibes or what?
I think it depends on the audience, to be honest. They're like, I am kind of in this weird position where my music, I get put in front of a lot of different audiences. So, you know, when I like opening for someone like Paolo Nutini, I don't think I could get away with going solo with tracks. But like my most recent tour was a very young audience. I was playing for a lot of teenagers and they don't care. They just want to see music. You know what I mean? Like they're just excited to be there and excited to be in on the experience. And I think if you just kind of capitalize on that, it depends on the audience, but I've just kind of had to accept like these people are just excited to see music in whatever form that's going to take. And so if I just go out there and even if it feels a little bit like I'm doing karaoke, just kind of just accepting that, you know, I want to be as excited about it as the people listening to music are. And just, yeah, trying to get over that and just foster the excitement. Like, honestly, I think tracks are becoming so normal that it's really not like you'll have some older jaded people maybe like you know when I told my dad I was going on tour with tracks he was like oh it's not real music and I was like shut up and I did it and it was you know it sucked at first but it was great it meant that I had a big sound on a low budget and yeah people are just excited to see music.
Thank you.
I'm Emily, and I'm an indie pop alternative artist based in Morgantown, West Virginia. I planned a gig, like one gig per week this month. So my month is like every weekend I'm doing a gig. And two of them are in the same town, and then one was in Virginia, which I did. I traveled to Virginia, and then one was in like an hour away in West Virginia. So I just want to ask, like, what would you say is the line between, like, oh, I just booked gigs for this month and a tour? Like, where do you draw the line? What's the difference between booking gigs, like, in a month or, like, an actual tour?
Just lie and call it a tour. It sounds more impressive. Like, straight up.
Do what you gotta do.
Yeah. Like, yeah, that might not be a tour. Like, you might be going home in between shows and stuff. But if you're playing a bunch of shows in quick succession that are technically in different cities, call it a tour. Who cares?
Or a run.
Yeah, or a run. Or yeah. Like, never be afraid to, you know, like, don't lie, but, like, never be afraid to just, like, make something sound as impressive as you can.
I am a big fan of visually representing a chunk of shows in, like, you know, this is the spring whatever, and then it's just a visual representation of you in a different photo with the mm-hmm. dates, and, you know, it's just a different, it's just batching it into a time frame and giving it a bit of a theme and a vibe. That's also helpful, and it does, you don't have to worry too much about what you call it, just... You know, give people the sense of, like, this is all happening at the same time within this region.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Good luck.
How you doing, y'all? My name is R. Breeze, and I'm an artist from Rahway, New Jersey. So this year, I had my first tour. It was a four-city tour. I hit New Jersey. I hit Florida, New York City, and Philly. And I was just kind of, I was intrigued when you said to avoid hitting New York City, because, like, I'm thinking, like, a major city like that, you should want to go there because all the people in it, you would feel like it's a line coming out the door. But I'm not gonna lie, when I did my show in New York, it was like, it really wasn't as big as the other ones, you know what I'm saying? And it kind of took me off guard. So hearing you say to avoid New York City, like, it kind of has me a little intrigued.
Yeah, I was just there. It was a little different. I was there for a showcase, but I think, like, Side Door is kind of hit on, like, the same reason why, like, people say not to do New York is, like, everyone, there's so many things being shoved down their throats in New York. You want to find places where people are excited to see you and, like, building community, right? Like, playing a city where they never get your kind of music can be really, really cool, and you get people who are really excited. I constantly get people asking me to go to Buffalo. They seem really starved for music in Buffalo, and that's close to New York City, you know, like, well, I'm from Canada, dude. 4.5 hours is nothing. I consider that close. everything's so spread apart in Canada, but yeah, I think finding places where they're actually asking artists to come can be really cool and a really great way to do it. And I think Side Door kind of, like, gets into that, where it's like, you want to go where people are actively looking for music and excited for it.
Yeah, I would definitely think about bigger cities. Those audiences have everything at their disposal. They can go see anything, right? And they probably still have a limited budget because they're living in a big city and it's expensive, right? So I really look at the secondary and tertiary markets because people are still people and money is still money and fans are still fans, right? And so if you can bring your music, like she said, to some place where it's like, I mean, one of our best selling venues is a tiny little community center. I mean, 400 cap, tiny, but it has a bigger capacity than the town that it's in. And it draws from the region around because there's nothing else to do there. And those people show up every time, sell it out. Doesn't matter who shows up to play. They go to see it. They buy the merch. They support the artists because they stopped in their town. And they're happy about that. So don't discount those smaller markets. Those are the folks who are going to – they know people in big towns. They're going to tell people about it when you come back. So go where you can build your audience. I mean, play New York City if you want to play New York City. But just know what you're getting into.
Okay, cool. Thank you.
Good luck.
Hey there. So I play in a band called Silver Mouse, and we've actually been touring for about 15 years, largely on the fact that I also have a good job. And I guess I was wondering, I'm just trying to think, I know in my mind what we do this for, but like with so many artists touring at break even or losing money, what are the outcomes that artists are looking for in touring where, you know, I'm making this investment, we're going to go on tour. What's the hope that that's going to turn into? Is it just that you're going bigger? You know, at what point, you say you're playing 1,000-person venues and still struggling to break even, like at what point does that become the core profit center, you know?
I think this is like such a central question to your artist life, and I don't even want to call it a career. I'm talking about your life. Like, how are you spending your days? How are you spending your hours? How are you spending your creative energy? What is it toward? Is this a means to an end? Or is this the means that you cannot not be an artist and you just got to do it? But know who you're doing for. Are those reasons your own? Are they someone else's? Is it someone else's dream that you're up there pushing? Like, that's what I'm saying about that why slide. It's like, really understand what that why is so that when you go out and do these things, you're fulfilling that why for yourself and nobody else.
Right, but so I guess my question is maybe a little bit more industry specific. I mean, I know why we tour, and we're a live act. We've released 4 albums. They're all just recordings of live shows. We can't do studio. We don't like doing studio. For us, it's about the live experience, right? We're a fully improvisational group. We just love playing around and with people. But I guess the question, like from a career perspective, you know, I'm trying to think, and you know, for us, I guess it's maybe a little different because that's how we're having fun. You know, whether we make money or not, doesn't matter. I've got a great job. I fund it. It's cool. Like, I'm in a very lucky position that way. But I guess, like, were we looking at, you know, because now we are really trying to think, could we make this a full-time endeavor? You know, what are the things that investing in the touring, besides just the doing it for the art, like, what are the points where it turns into that next step? Is it just being seen by the right people and, you know, randomly in some place? Is it audience development? Because even with audience development, I mean, our streaming has grown, but we're not getting rich off Spotify anytime soon.
I don't think there's a one-size-fits-all answer. I think it really depends on just so many different factors. I think the reason is connection. I mean, that's what's going to grow it, is having people who like it. If that's an industry person, if that's, you know, a teenager who just tells everyone about your art, like it really depends on your band and the audiences and what shows. Like, I don't think there's an easy kind of total answer. So, yeah.
Thank you.
Do you have time for one more?
Yep.
All right. Okay, I'll try not to use too much of those 2 minutes just saying it. First of all, Brigitte, I saw your show in Swan Dive. It was fantastic.
Oh,
thank you.
So I am field adjacent. This isn't my. I just love music, and I'm literally the dad. I'm the musician dad.
Hell yeah.
When I look at the field, it just seems. I'm wondering if we aren't moving towards era of patronage, like the 1600s and the 1700s. Yeah. And I'm wondering if there's any advocacy happening to the top tier artists around whom all of the funds are consolidating to not crowdsource, but like top tier source. Like, is there any advocacy going to, imagine what it would
are
be
like
for
Are you talking
about
taxing Taylor? Beyonce?
No, I'm talking about asking Taylor Swift to create a MacArthur Genius Grant for up and coming songwriters. And it wouldn't even have to be all that much if you're hitting the field with a Taylor Swift insignia, a Taylor Swift-backed artist. I'm just wondering if patronage ideas like that aren't in the works advocacy-wise.
Oh, I don't know. I mean, I'm not, you know, I'm in the industry, but I'm not on the industry side. You know, I just play songs. but I mean, I think, like, you see that in unofficial ways, just in, like, who artists choose to open for them, right, and stuff. Like, that is kind of an unofficial patronage. But then, unfortunately, then there's the questions of, are they actually paying enough for those artists to afford the tour So, I mean, yeah, it's a good question.
I mean, labels are functioning mostly off of like one giant artist, and then they pool those resources for the baby bands. Like, so that's generally what's happening. Yeah. And there is some more, I would say, fairer ways of operating labels that do a better job of that. That's on the label side of things. I don't see a lot of obvious, you know, 0.01% artists like doing something publicly, but I think, as Bridget said, I think there's a lot happening behind the scenes. There's a lot of pull up from artists who are like, I know, you know, an artist from Canada who did the co-write on Texas Hold'em for Beyonce. Like, there's a, and you know, that, so she's pulling people up all the time. We just don't necessarily see it.
Got it. Thank you.
Last one.
Hi, Devin Tran. I'm an artist out of Kansas City. I'm mostly the session and side player guy, though. That's kind of my thing. And I play in several bands around town, and some that go out on short runs. But it's probably, I do that because I need more work than what one act can give me, right? So on my side, I need that stability. Laura, you know me that I also do a number of other things outside of music. But to somebody like Bridget, when you think about putting together your team for whether or not you bring people on the road, how can side players like me make it an easier decision to choose whether or not to bring us? Or maybe more worth it to bring us?
Oh, man. I mean, I love playing with people. And the bands, like the people I hire to bring with me, so I don't know how to drive.
If you could drive.
Like, I unfortunately, like, literally, like, the people I play with do make it such a big thing, and I still sometimes can't bring them. Like, unfortunately, I don't think there's much. I don't think it's on the musician side. Like, you know, my drummer, he drives. He, you know, helps me carry everything. Like, my band is doing so much, and they do have those kind of, like, ways that they really help me, and I still can't bring them sometimes, unfortunately. So, it's hard to answer, but yeah, driving is a big one. Like, I legitimately can't get places without someone helping me. So,
just be a helpful bud.
Be a helpful bud.
You already are.
Yeah.
Or work the merch table. Yeah.
Yes. I, especially me touring, I'm like the only femme person that I tour with, and so having my bandmates go out and do merch while I do my makeup is like a huge help.
So we're at time. I like to wrap up on time. I really, again, I'm so grateful for all of you coming and being here on the last day of the conference. I'll stick around for a bit, either in the room or if they kick us out, I'll just stay outside. Thanks to Devin, who recorded this. We're going to put this up on YouTube and our socials. Sidedoor Access is our general way to find us. I'll do a little QR code here so that you can actually find it. QR code if you want to connect. Bridget, I hope you got hers. She's got four more shows left.
I'm not sure, but I'm playing one at 5 p.m. today.
And thanks so much to the sound
Eisenhower's folks
who made this happen. I really appreciate all the technical support today. Thanks, you guys. Have a great rest of your South by.